The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. It's time now for the Doctor's Lounge Show with Dr. Hal Schurz.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz. Every week, myself or my co-host, Dr. Scott, come to you with information about healthcare that you need so that you can advocate for yourself and for your family. We discuss the issues that doctors are talking about amongst themselves in doctors' lounges and elsewhere all around the country. We try to arm you with the information that you are not getting so that you can make critical decisions about healthcare and policy in life. The show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation stands on the principles of the doctor-patient relationship and for healthcare freedom for all Americans. We need your support. This election season, you're seeing what is happening with the left throwing everything they can against people who are not thinking the way that they do and don't believe that the country and the society should be in the direction that they deem is appropriate. So it's so important for you to get involved with any organization that is standing up for principles that you truly believe in. It's no longer acceptable. It's not possible for you to sit on the sidelines any longer. You've got to do something. One thing that you can do is to just support the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. We're doing the work in healthcare. We're trying to do what we can to spread the word so that you understand what it is that is important and what you need to do to prevent people from taking this away from you. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation website is where you can give just a small amount of money. You can do this on a recurring basis every month. It's tax deductible, and it really helps us to continue to put this show on, which is the voice of truth and reality and something that needs to continue, but we can't do it without your help. Go to docsforpatientcare.org. That's d4pcfoundation.org. And give what you can. And after you've thought about giving what you can, double it. Because this go-around, this election, we hear this every year, is the most consequential election in our history. Well, that may be true. Each election may be the most consequential up until that time. This one certainly qualifies, because if we get another 4 years of this current government, you can kiss our country goodbye, and everything that you hold dear is going to just disappear and be a distant memory. And you're going to have to answer to your children and answer the question about what things used to be and why is it no longer that way, and what did you do to help make a difference to keep that from happening? And I hope that you can look at yourself in the mirror and answer that question. So help Docs for Patient Care Foundation do what we do. I'm going to talk today about the aspirational healthcare platform for the GOP. I've heard quite a bit about the mandate for leadership manifesto that was put out by the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation has done this kind of work for well over 20 years, putting together a roadmap for conservatives. Actually, the initial effort dates back to the 1980s. And as a Heritage Foundation supporter and friend and member, I reached out and asked my good friend there, and I don't like to name names, so I won't, to send me a copy of this manifesto, which I'm holding in my hand right here. And this is the Mandate for Leadership 2025, The Conservative Promise. And in this book is the principles for conservatism to revamp the government. And it's broken up into different sections. The first section is taking the reins of government. The second, and that means the White House and the executive branch. The second section is the common defense, which is the Defense Department, the Department of Homeland Security, State Department, intelligence community, media agencies, Agency for International Development. The third section is the general welfare, which is all the other departments in the cabinet, the Agriculture Department, the Education Department, Department of Energy, the EPA, Housing and Urban Development, the Interior, the Justice Department, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Veterans Affairs. And then in here is also the Department of Health and Human Services, into which the healthcare issues fall. And this is a really hard read. It's 900 pages, but it's important, and I have not gotten even part of the way into this. There are two other sections, the economy and then independent regulatory agencies, like the FEC, Federal Election Committee, Federal Trade Commission, Federal Communications Commission, etc. I'm going to focus today on the Department of Health and Human Services, under which healthcare falls, and where the Heritage Foundation falls very short is their approach towards fixing healthcare. By that, what I mean is that they are looking at the fix as more of a government fix. And I have to say that what I'm going to talk about does require a lot of government. But I'm going to drill down on specific healthcare issues and talk about what it is that needs to happen to fix healthcare and to get this message out to as many Americans as possible. You know, healthcare affects everybody. There's not a single person in this country that healthcare does not touch. And although it is not polling as the number one issue this election season, it has been for previous elections. It's still high on the list of priorities for a great deal of Americans. And if you are not paying attention to this, things can go south in a hurry, change drastically, and the losers will be the patients. What the Heritage Plan for healthcare is mostly focusing on, which is, I think, a huge mistake, are the right to life issues, abortion, the Hyde Amendment, the different issues that pertain to abortion or touch abortion. And my opinion as a healthcare professional is that we are focusing far too much energy on that issue and letting that overwhelm our big picture decision making or planning on how to fix healthcare. And when we get embroiled into this debate, everything else bogs down and we cannot win. I say put it aside, not focus on this. And yes, at some point we need to get to a common ground that 80% of Americans can agree on. But I think that putting this front and center in a healthcare debate is detrimental to fixing the healthcare system. And it is not going to bring people together in agreement on what's important in fixing healthcare. The Heritage Plan has 5 goals in their healthcare plan: protecting life, conscience, and bodily integrity. 2, empowering patient choices and provider autonomy. 3, promoting stable and flourishing married families. 4, preparing for the next healthcare emergency. And 5, instituting greater transparency, accountability, and oversight. All of these are important. This is not the crux of healthcare. This is not how you fix healthcare. This is not how you message this to Americans who are concerned about the high cost of healthcare, the poorer quality of healthcare, why they can't get drugs, why their drugs are so expensive. These are the issues that Americans are facing on a daily basis. This is what's important to fixing healthcare. The Heritage Plan is looking at revamping agencies, the CDC, the FDA, the National Institute of Health, the NIH, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, looking to defund organizations that receive federal funds, like Planned Parenthood, talking about how COVID regulations must go. Now, I am not saying for a second that that every one of these things is not important, that we shouldn't be looking at everything on this list. But honestly, is this the most important thing in healthcare? Is this what is on people's minds about healthcare first and foremost? I don't think so. The problem with the Heritage Plan is that there is no physician input into this plan. I'm looking at their list of contributors, and there are no physicians, certainly no practicing physicians, but no physicians who have any kind of experience in healthcare. I believe that Ben Carson is on this list, but he is not being asked to weigh in on the section on healthcare because he was former Housing and Urban Development Secretary, and he has been called upon for his expertise in that arena. But aside from Dr. Carson, there are no practicing physicians on this list. Nobody who has taken care of a patient. Nobody who has had to deal with insurance companies. Nobody who has had to deal with the bureaucracy of an ever-growing medical bureaucracy in hospitals. Nobody who's had to deal with the government mandates that are tying them up and preventing them from delivering quality health care to their patients. So that's my beef with the Heritage Foundation plan. Not that their ideas aren't sound, but they're focusing on the wrong things. And if you want to get people's attention regarding healthcare and bring them on board, enlist them to be advocates for you, enlist them to support what you are trying to advocate for them, you need to get more granular than fixing federal agencies, federal bureaucracies. You need to talk about problems. So what I have done is I've looked at the problems as a physician dealing with this healthcare just swamp, and making a list of items that people would be interested in, people, everyday people who are suffering in healthcare, who will relate to these issues and will say, yes, that's me, that's what I'm dealing with. Yes, if you are supporting this, if you are advocating to fix this problem, I am on board with you. So let me share with you what I've come up with. And it's a rather lengthy list. It's a two-page list of items that people need to hear about and hear the GOP candidates, whether it's the president, senators, congressmen, governors, or state representatives talking about, because this drills down to the very lowest level of politics. And by lowest, I mean closest to the people in their communities. I'm going to start with healthcare insurance. You know, we've got Obamacare right now, and we had Trump, who was supporting efforts to minimize the reliance on government and more reliance on your own capabilities, more self-reliance. And what that means is that you have to have an insurance system that is more responsive to the needs of patients, of individuals, not a one-size-fits-all bureaucracy, which is exceedingly expensive, and it covers everything because that's what government does. It gives everything to everybody, and somebody's got to pay for that, and you as a taxpayer are paying for it. And if you don't qualify for an Obamacare subsidy, then you are paying for insurance on the Obamacare exchanges, which are just astronomically expensive. For a family of four, with the premiums, the deductibles, and the copays, it will cost for a silver plan on average $40,000 out of your pocket annually before the insurance kicks in a dime. So what did Trump do? Well, there were a lot of people who were losing their insurance, and he had the short-term health care policies reinstated. Those policies have existed for a while. Obama called them junk policies, the Marxists are calling them junk policies because they undermine the Obamacare plan. But what they are insurance policies that you get to decide what coverage you want. And if you are a healthy 25-year-old, you might not want to get hospice care or elder care covered in your insurance policy. You might not want hair replacement. If you're a guy, you may not want maternity benefits. You get to select what you're paying for in your insurance. And that's what these plans did. And they were renewable under Trump, which has now been eliminated with Obama. So you can have a short-term policy for 3 months and then no longer. And you can't renew it. And that is a problem. People need to be able to customize what insurance they are paying for. You get to do that with your homeowner's insurance, whether you want to cover certain items in your house. You get to do that with your car insurance, what you want to cover, whether you want to cover collision for $250, $500, $1,000 deductible, uninsured motorists, whatever. You should be able to do that with your health care insurance. The Democrats, the Marxists, the leftists don't want you to do that because then you have too much control. You should be able to move your insurance. It should be portable. It shouldn't be tied to your employment. And that's something that that we need to be talking about. A lot of Americans have health savings accounts. When they get their insurance at work, a certain amount of money is permitted to be put away into an account that accrues dollars, that earns interest, earns earnings by being in a vehicle that allows it to increase in value. And that's not taxable. And those HSAs are tied to your insurance plan that your employer is providing for you. Well, what if you leave and you don't have that insurance? You can transfer your HSA to a different insurance company, but your HSA is still tied to an insurance plan. And what if you want to do something outside of insurance that your insurance won't approve? You know, in order for you to use your HSA dollars, you've got to get approval from your insurance company. And I'll give you a very tangible example. If you have a child, a teenager, who needs a breast reduction because she's uncomfortable with the size of her breasts, and you have an HSA account, and you want to use those dollars to pay for it, in many cases, you can't do that because your insurance company views that as cosmetic surgery, and they won't approve it, and they won't let you use their HSA dollars for that. Why not? It's your money. You should be able to do that. And this is something that will resonate with people. If it's your money, an insurance company should not be telling you that you can't use that money to pay for some other issue in healthcare. Another example are direct primary care practices. If you have an HSA plan and you decide that you want a direct primary care doctor, why can't you use your HSA dollars, your money, to pay the monthly premium for a direct primary care doctor? You absolutely should. That's the message we need to be sending to people. And for employers, they should get a tax break for HRAs, for health reimbursement accounts. If they're putting away money on behalf of their employees, not the employees putting away that money, but the employers putting away that money for their employees, they should get a tax benefit for that. That's a an incentive for a lot of people to work for a company if they know they're getting perks from the employer, like a health reimbursement account. Why shouldn't that money be treated as a tax deduction for the employer? It should. Back in the day, before Obamacare completely perverted our healthcare landscape, there were risk pools for pre-existing conditions, and people with the same problem could pool money and be able to tap into that if they had a certain problem, if they had a chronic debilitating condition, diabetes, or if they had multiple sclerosis or cancer. There used to be high-risk pools, and by pooling people in these aggregations, it would reduce the cost for individuals to get coverage for their problems. And they've pretty much gone by the wayside. They've disappeared. And this is something that needs to be reinstated. Imagine if you had the ability to have insurance, pay for what you need, be able to get indemnity insurance for major medical, be able to contribute to high-risk pools. This is the framework. This is the roadmap to getting to consumerism, where you can be in charge of your health care and be able to make the decisions that are necessary so that you can save money in the long run. Tied to this is surprise medical billing. This is something that we've heard more and more about. This has to do with the hospitals, it's hospitals and insurance companies. It's insurance companies that are dropping doctors from their panels, and these doctors have privileges at hospitals, and the patients are coming to the hospital, they're getting their care, and they think that because they're coming to the hospital and their doctor is covered, that everything else will be covered by their insurance company. And that's not the case if they require the care of other medical services that may no longer be on that insurance plan. That information needs to be disclosed to patients in writing in the future so that they don't receive surprise medical bills. And all of this falls into the aspect of healthcare insurance reform. There needs to be a czar to oversee all of these items, all of these efforts to fix healthcare insurance. I don't think that we need to get rid of insurance. There are a lot of people who are critical of healthcare insurance, and they are critical about employer-based insurance. They're critical about any aspect of insurance. I think that there's a place for insurance in this country, and you shouldn't get rid of it. Now, we may get to a point, and I hope that we do, where we get rid of insurance entirely in healthcare. But that's, I think, a long way off, and there needs to be a bridge to get to that point. And healthcare insurance reform is where we start. This is the message that will resonate with Americans, because they all agree universally about how bad healthcare insurance has been for them. The only ones that healthcare insurance has not been bad for are the healthcare insurance companies, who are making record profits, and who are doing things, in my opinion, that are anti-consumer and hurting the American public and the American patients. What insurance companies are doing is they are buying pharmacy benefit management companies. Those are the middlemen that oversee the insurance plans that your healthcare insurer is providing. Every healthcare insurer, if you've got drug coverage, has a formulary. That formulary is put together by so-called experts that are middlemen that seek the best prices for the insurance company, not for the patients, and the drug companies give kickbacks to these middlemen, to the pharmacy benefit managers. So imagine that these PBMs are making money from the insurance companies for putting together the formulary, and they're getting money from the pharmaceutical companies to have their drugs on the formulary for these insurance companies. These middlemen are sucking billions of dollars out of your pocket, and they are lining their pockets to make an unbelievable amount of money that is unnecessary. We don't need pharmacy benefit managers. We need to get rid of that industry. This is what the insurance czar would be tasked to doing, and outlaw insurance companies from owning pharmacy benefit management companies. The insurance companies are also buying up retail pharmacies, so they are controlling every lever of drug distribution between the producers, the pharmaceutical companies, and the patients. And it's got to go through different hands. It's got to go from the pharmaceutical companies to the retail pharmacies, PBMs, to the insurance companies, to the retail pharmacy, to the patient. So these drugs are passing through so many different hands with so many dollars going to so many pockets. That's why your drugs are so expensive. Yes, it costs money to produce drugs. And yes, pharmaceutical companies need to recoup their investment. But there's so many people in between the pharmaceutical companies and you that the cost of these drugs is unnecessarily high as a direct result of this. We need to get rid of this consolidation in this industry. We need to get rid of consolidation in all industries in healthcare, for that matter. And I'll get to that in a moment. But this is what the healthcare insurance czar under a healthcare, what the GOP plan should really call for is a healthcare reform czar. And under that czar are sub-czars who are looking at different industries but who work together. People who have experience dealing with these industries, who know their tricks, who know their modus operandi, who will be able to stop this. Let's talk about hospitals for a second, because hospitals right now are holding the keys to the kingdom in healthcare. They have been given unfettered, unprecedented power in healthcare. We need a sub-czar to rein in hospitals, which are directly responsible for your healthcare dollars going out of your pocket and into theirs. This is the message we need to be telling people around the country. This is what the GOP needs to be talking about. They need somebody like me who is able to talk on behalf of the GOP candidates that will support these items on this healthcare platform. This is what resonates with people because they're being affected by this every single day. You know, hospitals right now, they control 65 to 70% of the healthcare delivery in this country because they have bought up doctors. They have been allowed to practice medicine. There used to be a law, which was the corporate practice of medicine. It was against the law for corporations to practice medicine. This is why we have Kaiser Permanente, because back in the day, the Kaiser hospitals wanted a staff that would work at their hospital, but they could not hire the staff. It was against the law. So what did they do? They encouraged doctors to get together and form a multi-specialty group, the Permanente group, and they worked in tandem, hand in hand, to have their medical group work at the Kaiser hospitals. And this was the model from which Kaiser Permanente sprung. Now, what has happened over the last 50 to 60 years is that these laws that prohibited corporations from practicing medicine have been ignored. And the hospitals are corporations. They are, in many cases, tax-exempt corporations, but they're nonetheless corporations. And they have been allowed to buy doctors. Now, an exception to this rule in the past have been universities, which hire physicians, and they are employed by the university, and they have university hospitals, or the VA, which has VA doctors who work at the hospitals. But for private hospitals, the majority of which are classified as tax-exempt hospitals, to be able to buy physician practices and to and own physician practices is wrong because it is driving up healthcare costs. How is it doing that? It's doing it by the way that reimbursement for healthcare services occurs. The place where healthcare is administered will determine the amount of money that is reimbursed for those services. So what do I mean by that? What I mean is that if you are a doctor who runs who's a gastroenterologist, runs a GI lab where you do colonoscopies and endoscopies and all those procedures, you get paid X from Medicare and from insurance companies. But if those same services are administered in a hospital, the reimbursement from Medicare is 3X or 5X or 10X. So what do you think happens? The hospitals see this and they say, whoa, hold on here. If we had this GI lab instead of these private doctors, you mean we could go ahead and we could make that much more money? So what do? They buy GI practices and they put up GI labs. Now the GI lab may not even move a foot. It may be in the exact same place, but now it's owned by a hospital. And now the hospital does the billing. And what yesterday, the GI lab owned by the physician was getting paid X for the colonoscopy. If you're a patient and you go to that GI lab tomorrow and the hospital has bought that practice, you're now paying 3X or 5X or more for that exact same procedure. That is called site, what needs to happen to fix that is site neutral payments, which means that no matter where you administer the care, the procedure gets reimbursed the same. And when that happens, the incentive to buy doctors is going to go away, and hospitals will no longer be incentivized to buy up doctors. And the same is true with even the professional fees. If you come to see me and I charge X, and then tomorrow I decide to sell my practice to a hospital, and then you come see me next week, the charge for that service has gone up 3X because now you're getting a hospital service. That should not be the case. So this needs to be eliminated, and hospitals should not be allowed to purchase physician practices, to purchase physician services, and they should be site-neutral payments to prevent this. Under Obamacare, hospitals lobbied to prevent doctors from owning multi-specialty hospitals or surgery centers. Why? Because, again, if hospitals control the flow, then the reliance on government and government programs will be far greater. If I had my own surgery center and I could charge cash prices and be willing to take far less than the government was willing to pay because I can get paid cash at the point of service, I'm incentivized to do that. But the government doesn't want you to do that. So we need to get rid of that prohibition and let doctors get back to owning hospitals and surgery centers and running them and doing it on a multi-specialty basis, which gets to Stark laws, which means that there are certain laws on the books which prohibit doctors from engaging in activities which are deemed by the government to be collusionary, which will drive up the cost of healthcare. Quite the opposite. It will lower the cost of healthcare because there is a incentive to compete against the hospitals. And this has been shown in states that don't have certificate of need laws, which is another area of collusion between the government and hospitals that allow hospitals to prevent doctors from owning hospitals and from having multi-specialty groups. These three things will lower the cost of healthcare, getting rid of certificate of need laws so that you don't have to apply to the state, so that you can put up a surgery center or a hospital, getting rid of Stark laws so that doctors can innovate, and preventing hospitals from buying doctor practices and from capitalizing on unequal payments, getting site-neutral payments instituted. Those are the things that will directly lower healthcare costs for patients right away. Hospitals are consolidating. They're becoming monopolies in certain areas. Again, something that needs to be stopped because it is taking away competition. And if doctors ran hospitals, they would do it better than middle management. You know, over the past 50 years, the percentage of doctors that have gone up, the increase in the number of doctors in healthcare has gone up between 6 and 12%. But the number of managers, hospital administrators, middlemen in healthcare has gone up 3,000%. So what's wrong with that picture? There's money flowing out of your pockets. There should be a direct link between you, the patient, and the service that you receive. And the more hands that those dollars touch, the more expensive it is for you. So we need to rein in the hospitals, and we need to take away their ability to get bigger and more powerful. We need to take away their tax-exempt status. They could buy real estate and not pay taxes. And they are, in many areas, the largest employer and the largest landowner in certain geographic areas. And they don't pay taxes. So this has got to stop. We need the sub-czar over hospitals to rein this in. Private equity is another area that really has flourished in the past 20 years, where there are corporations, privately held businesses, that are buying doctor practices, and they are rolling them up in order to make them more attractive to another buyer so that they can flip them and make a profit. There's no profit in healthcare. Healthcare has such a low margin, but these businesses believe that they can suck money out of healthcare and make it work for them. And we're seeing over and over again that private equity firms are going away from this. They're scaling back. Pediatrics, a subdivision of Mednax, just fired over 50 medical practices that they owned because they could not make this work. And if they're not making enough profit, they're going to only focus on the practices that they could suck the most money out of. Doesn't this make sense to you, that having private equity involved in the most lucrative of the medical specialties makes no sense to you as a consumer? Having them own dermatology practices or plastic surgery practices or dental practices or other practices where traditionally it has been dollar practices where the doctors are making fairly good amount of money. These private equity firms come in and offer a package that is so enticing for cash right now in front of them that it's hard for these doctors, who are getting hammered by insurance companies and hospitals and bureaucracy, to pass up on this. This is why our healthcare system is failing. I've already touched on the middlemen, the pharmacy benefit management companies, but the insurance czar is going to work with the insurance sub czar is going to work with a big pharma sub czar to rein in the PBMs and make sure that these discounts that the pharmaceutical companies are giving go to patients instead of hospitals or to pharmacies. Hospitals are getting them right now for cancer drugs. It should go back to the patients. The third rail in healthcare reform has been tort reform. You know, the malpractice lawyers, the tort bar, they will fight this tooth and nail, but anyone who has had to deal with an adverse outcome in healthcare and has thought about suing, you have a choice of either getting an ambulance chaser who is going to keep the lion's share of an award and only take an award where it's going to be a certain amount of money, it's got to be worth their while, or you're going to get somebody who is really not interested in your case and not going to be concerned if it's a small claim. There needs to be a medical court where it will adjudicate cases where there have been adverse outcomes. It may not be malpractice or malfeasance, but just adverse outcomes that do qualify for some kind of remuneration for the excessive medical bills that a patient may have endured because of a medical error, a bad medical outcome. So that's something that is an entirely lengthy conversation, but something that needs to be discussed in healthcare. We need to preserve Medicare. It needs to be preserved. And the CMS needs to take leadership in that, but there needs to be somebody in this healthcare reform czar and czarina network that's going to oversee Medicare and Medicare reform. People who are getting Medicare should be guaranteed Medicare. There are people who believe that the people paying into Medicare are getting far more medical benefits than the money that they've paid out. And that may or may not be true. Imagine for a moment if you, instead of putting your money into the government for Medicare, got to put it into a defined contribution plan that was managed by you, but overseen by the government, much like, you know, your IRA or your 401k. You got to control the money in your Medicare account. Imagine how much better of a consumer you would be. You would look to have a direct primary care doctor, one who charges $80 a month to be your primary care doctor. You would be looking to go to a facility for your surgery that took cash, but you knew exactly what it was going to cost you. A place like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, which publishes their prices for surgical procedures, and the cost does not exceed that amount by one penny. Compared to getting your care in a hospital, not knowing what that's going to not knowing what you're going to be charged, usually 5 to 10 times the amount for an operation that a place like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma would charge, getting charged $5 for an aspirin, or getting charged $250 for a complete blood count, which when ordered by a direct primary care doctor from a laboratory which they have a relationship with, would cost $2.50. So Medicare needs to be preserved, but we need to change how those dollars flow and where they go and how we allow people on Medicare to pay for their health care in the future. So we need to reduce the regulatory burden on doctors. Somebody's got to oversee that. And why is that important for patients? Because the more regulations you have on your doctor, the less time they can spend with you. If you have to see patients every 7 minutes and look into a computer and write down things and not engage with your patients, that patient's not getting the kind of health care that they deserve or you would like to give. There are so many regulations on doctors today that is resulting in doctor burnout and doctors leaving the profession. One of the major reasons why we have a doctor shortage. And so we really need to fix this problem so that doctors can get back to the task of taking care of patients once again and not being bureaucrats on behalf of a government that is trying to control healthcare. I'm going to talk about a few things right now that are going to be controversial things, but a healthcare czar needs to take the reins in this. We need to define gender the way that it is meant to be defined. There are men and there are women, period. If you're not a man or a woman, then you are not a human being. You're a man or a woman. Now, you can identify as a woman. You can identify as a man. You can identify as a furry or as a Martian. I don't care what you identify as, but you are a man and a woman. Let me tell you, this is how crazy it's become. I heard this on the radio yesterday. There's an organization in Canada called the I think it's the Cervical Cancer Association, Canadian Cervical Cancer Association, and they put information out there on cervical cancer. Well, the woke crowd was up in arms about using the term cervix because it is not necessarily a body part that just women have. So they changed their terminology to outside hole. How absurd is this? How crazy have we become? Outside hole, first of all, it's stupid because it's an inside hole. The outside hole is the vagina, but a cervix is a cervix. And so finally, they did an about face when there was enough pushback, and they said that there were, that we're going to keep calling it a cervix, but men can have cervixes. How absurd is this? We've got to get away from this stuff. This is enough. Enough's enough, people. And we need people, we need adults in the room in Washington who are going to put an end to this nonsense, to stop disfiguring surgery in minors. That should be prosecuted. It should be against the law. We need to get rid of DEI in healthcare. They're teaching this stuff to the doctors who are in training, who are going to be our future doctors. And this is not everybody wins a trophy, folks. Healthcare is not that at all. It is a meritocracy. And you don't want to go to somebody who checks a box because they look a certain way or believe a certain thing. You want the best. And DEI in healthcare is absolutely perverting our system. And medical education needs a major overhaul there. This is big. No healthcare to illegal aliens. It is absolutely inundating our system, and it is hurting us. And you're paying for this. And if you want to pay for it and you want to support somebody and pay for them to go to a doctor, be my guest. I don't see any liberals, any leftists who are taking an illegal alien and bringing them to a doctor. Put your money where your mouth is, folks, but you've got to stop this. This has got to stop. And there are a number of other things on this list, you know, but I think we got to stop talking about abortion. It's something that is dividing us as a country. We need to get to a middle ground somehow. But when we're talking about healthcare, the things I talked about today are things that I think that 90% or more of our citizens can agree on. That's the GOP message. That's what needs to be delivered loud and clear by every candidate in this country. And we need to have candidates who are committed to doing this. Thanks for being here today with us. I hope that this was helpful for you. And I am not going to be here in 2 weeks. I'm going to have former co-host Mike Karuchik sitting in for me, inspiring you with some of his words of wisdom about healthcare. I don't know what he's going to speak on, but I know it's going to be good. And Dr. Scott will be back with you next week. Thanks for being with us.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.